bastard. The moon will rise, and we will be off. And I shall kill the witch, and we can go home. And you can see my beautiful Athene and my beautiful son, and we will keep you safe. Not likely, Zan thought. Once the moon rose, she would be able to capture at least a little bit of its magic, a very little. It would be like trying to carry water in a fishnet. Still, better than nothing. She'd still have the drips. And maybe she would have enough to make this poor man go to sleep for a little bit. And maybe she could even ambulate his clothing and his boots and send him home, where he could wake up in the loving embrace of his family. All she needed was the moon. "Do you hear that?" the man said, springing to his feet. Zan looked around. She hadn't heard anything. But he was right. Something was coming. Or someone. "Can it be that the witch is coming to me?" he asked. "Could I be that lucky?" "Indeed," Zan thought, with more derision than was likely fair. She gave the man a little peck through his shirt. "Imagine the witch coming to you, lucky duck." She rolled her beady little bird eye. "Look," he said, pointing down the ridge. Zan looked. It was true. Someone was moving up the ridge. Two somethings. Zan couldn't account for what the second figure was. It didn't look like anything that she had ever seen before. But the first thing was unmistakable. That blue glow. That shimmer of silver. Luna's magic. Her magic, coming closer and closer and closer. "It's the witch," the young man said. "I am sure of it." And he hid behind a tangled clump of undergrowth, keeping himself very still. He trembled. He moved his knife from one hand to the other. "Don't worry, my friend," he said. "I shall make it very, very quick. The witch will arrive. She will not see me." He swallowed. "And then I shall slit her throat." Chapter 40. In which there is a disagreement about boots. "Take those off, dear," Sister Ignatia said. Her voice was cream. She was all soft steps and padded claws. "They simply do not become you." The madwoman tipped her head. The moon was about to rise. The mountain rumbled under her feet. She stood in front of a large stone. "Don't forget," the stone said on one side. "I mean it," it said on the other. The madwoman missed her birds. They had flown away and had not come back. Were they real to begin with? The madwoman didn't know. All she knew at the moment was that she liked these boots. She had fed the goats and the chickens and gathered the milk and the eggs and thanked the animals for their time. But all the while, she had felt as though the boots were feeding her. She couldn't explain it. The boots enlivened her, muscle and bone. She felt as light as a paper bird. She felt like she could run for 1,000 miles and she wouldn't lose her breath. Sister Ignatia took a step forward. Her lips unfurled in a thin smile. The madwoman could hear the head sister's tigerish growl rumbling underground. She felt her back start to sweat. She took several hurried steps backward until her body found the standing stone. She leaned against it and found a comfort there. She felt her boots start to buzz. There was magic all around this place. Tiny bits and pieces. The madwoman could feel it. The sister, she could see, felt it too. Both women reached their nimble, clever fingers this way and that, hooking shiny bits of magic into their hands, saving it for later. The more the madwoman gathered, the clearer the path to her daughter became. "You poor lost soul," the head sister said. "How far you are from home. How confused you must be. It is so lucky that I found you here before some wild animal or roving ruffian did. This is a dangerous wood, the most dangerous in the world." The mountain rumbled. A plume of smoke erupted from the farthest craters. The head sister turned pale. "We need to leave this place," Sister Ignatia said. The madwoman felt her knees start to shake. "Look," the sister pointed to the crater. I've seen that before. A long time ago. The plumes come, then the earth shakes, then the first explosions, and then the whole mountain opens its face to the sky. If we are here when that happens, we're both dead. But if you give me those boots, she licked her lips, then I can use the power inside them to get us both back home, back to the tower. Your safe, homey little tower. She smiled again. Even her smile was terrifying. You are lying, Tiger's Heart, the mad woman whispered. Sister Ignatia flinched at the term. You have no intention of carrying me back. Her hands were on the stone. The stone was making her see things, or perhaps the boots were making her see things. She saw a group of magicians, old men and old women, betrayed by the head sister, before she was the head sister, before there was a protectorate. The head sister was supposed to carry the magicians on her back when the volcano erupted, but she did nothing of the kind. She left them in the smoke to die. How do you know that name? Sister Ignatia whispered. Everyone knows that name, the mad woman said. It was in a story about how the witch ate a tiger's heart. They all whisper it. It's wrong, of course. You don't have a tiger's heart. You have no heart at all. There is no such story, Sister Ignatia said. She began to pace. She hunched her shoulders. She growled. I started the stories in the Protectorate. I did. They all came from me. There is no story that I did not tell first. You're wrong. The tiger walks, the sisters said. I could hear them. They were talking about you, you know. The head sister turned quite pale. Impossible, she whispered. It was impossible for my child to still be alive, the mad woman said, and yet she is. And she was here, recently. The impossible is possible. She looked around. I like this place, she said. Give me those boots. That's another thing. Riding a flock of paper birds is impossible. And yet I did it. I don't know where my birds are, but they'll find their way back to me. And it was impossible for me to know where my baby went, yet I have the clearest picture of where she is, right now. And I have a pretty good idea of how to get to her. Not in my head, you see, but in my feet. These boots, they're ever so clever. Give me my boots, the head sister roared. She balled her hands into two tight fists and raised them over her head. When she swept them back down, uncurling her fingers, they held four sharp knives. Without hesitating, she reared back and snapped her hands forward, shooting the knife blades directly for the madwoman's heart. And they would have struck, too, if the madwoman had not spun on one heel and taken three graceful leaps to the side. The boots are mine, Sister Ignatia roared. You don't even know how to use them. The madwoman smiled. Actually, she said, I believe I do. Sister Ignatia lunged at the madwoman, who took several wind-up steps in place before speeding away in a flash. And the sister was alone. A second crater began to plume. The ground shook so hard it nearly knocked Sister Ignatia to her knees. She pressed her hands against the rocky ground. It was hot. Any moment now. The eruption was almost here. She stood, smoothed her gown. Well then, she said, if that's the way they want to play it, fine. I'll play too. And she followed the madwoman into the trembling forest. Chapter 41 In which several paths converge. Luna scrambled up the steep slope toward the ridgeline. The upper edge of the moon had just begun to emerge over the lip of the horizon. She could feel a buzzing inside her, like a gear spring wound too tight and whizzing out of control. She felt herself surging, and that surge erupting wildly from her extremities. She tripped, and her hands fell hard on the pebbly ground, and the pebbles began to jostle and scuttle and crawl away like bugs. Or no, they were bugs. Antennae and hairy legs and iridescent wings. Or they became water. Or ice. The moon pushed higher over the horizon. Her grandmother had taught Luna, when she was a little girl with scabby knees and matted hair, how a caterpillar lives, growing big and fat and sweet-tempered until it forms a chrysalis. And inside the chrysalis, it changes. Its body unmakes. Every portion of itself unravels, unwinds, undoes, and reforms into something else. "What does it feel like?" Luna had asked. "It feels like magic," her grandmother had said very slowly, her eyes narrowing. And then Luna had gone blank. Now, in her memory, she could see that blankness, how the word magic flew away like a bird. Indeed, she could see it flying, each sound, each letter, skittering out of her ears and fluttering away. But now it came flying back. Her grandmother had tried to explain the magic to her once upon a time, maybe more than once, but then perhaps she had simply grown accustomed to Luna's not knowing. And now Luna felt as though she was in a storm of memories jumbling around inside her skull. "The caterpillar goes into the chrysalis," her grandmother had said, "and then it changes. Its skin changes, and its eyes change, and its mouth changes. Its feet vanish. Every bit of itself, even its knowledge of itself, turns to mush." "Mush?" Luna had asked, wide-eyed. "Well," her grandmother had reassured her, "perhaps not mush. Stuff. The stuff of stars. The stuff of light. The stuff of a planet before it is a planet. The stuff of a baby before it's born. The stuff of a seed before it is a sycamore. Everything you see is in the process of making or unmaking or dying or living. Everything is in a state of change." And now, as Luna ran up the ridge, she was changing. She could feel it. Her bones and her skin and her eyes and her spirit. The machine of her body, every gear, every spring, every well-honed lever, had altered, rearranged, and clicked into place. A different place. And she was new. There was a man at the top of the ridge. Luna couldn't see him, but she could feel him with her bones. She could feel her grandmother nearby. Or at least she was fairly certain it was her grandmother. She could see the grandmother-shaped impression on her own soul, but when she tried to get a sense of where her grandmother was now, it was blurred somehow. "It's the witch," she heard the man say. Luna felt her heart seize. She ran even faster, though the ridge was steep and the way was long. With each stride, she increased her speed. "Grandmama," her heart cried out. "Go away." She didn't hear this with her ears. She heard it in her bones. "Turn around. What are you doing here, you foolish girl?" She was imagining it. Of course she was. And yet, why did it seem as though the voice came from the grandmother-shaped impression in her spirit? And why did it sound just like Zan? "Don't worry, my friend," Luna heard the man say. "I will make it very quick. The witch will come, and I will slit her throat."
"Grandmama," Luna cried out. "Look out!"
And she heard a sound, like the cry of a swallow, ringing through the night.
"I would suggest that we move more quickly, my friend,"
Glurk said, holding Firion by the wing and dragging him forward.
"I feel sick, Glurk," Firion said, falling to his knees.
If he had fallen that hard earlier in the day, surely he would have cut himself. But his knees, indeed his legs and his feet, and the whole of his back and even his front paws, were now covered with a thick, leathery skin on which bright, hard scales were beginning to form.
"We do not have time for you to be sick," Glurk said, looking back. Firion was now as big as he was, and growing by the moment. And it was true, he was looking a bit green about the face,
but maybe that was his normal color. It was impossible to say. It was, Glurk felt, a most inconvenient time to choose to grow, but he was being unfair.
"Excuse me," Therion said, and he heaved himself over to a low shrub and vomited profusely. "Oh, dear. I seem to have lit some things on fire."
Glurk shook his head.
"If you can stamp it out, do so. But if you are right about the volcano, it won't much matter what is on fire and what is not."
Therion shook his head and shook his wings. He tried flapping them a few times, but he still wasn't strong enough to lift off. He sniffed. A stricken look pressed onto his face.
"I still can't fly."
"I think it is safe to say that is a temporary condition," Glurk said.
"How do you know?"
Therion said. He did his best to hide the sob lurking in his voice. He did not hide it very well. Glurk regarded his friend. The growing had slowed, but it had not stopped. At least now Therion seemed to be growing more evenly.
"I don't know. I can only hope for the best."
Glurk curled his great wide jaws into a grin.
"And you, dear Therion, are one of the best I know. Come, to the top of the ridge, let us hurry."
And they rushed through the undergrowth and scrambled up the rocks. The mad woman had never felt so good in her life. The sun was down, the moon was just starting to rise, and she was speeding through the forest. She did not like the look of the ground. Too many pitfalls and boiling pots and steamy depths that might cook her alive. Instead, in the boots, she ran from branch to branch as easily as a squirrel. The head sister was following her. She could feel the stretch and curl of the sister's muscles. She could feel the ripple of speed and the flash of color as she loped through the forest. She paused for a moment on the thick branch of a tree that she couldn't identify. The bark was deeply furrowed, and she wondered if it ran like rivers when it rained. She peered into the gathering dark. She allowed her vision to go wide, to hook over hills and ravines and ridges, to creep over the curve of the world. There, a flash of blue with a shimmer of silver. There, a glow of lichen-y green. There, the young man she had hurt. There, some kind of monster and his pet. The mountain rumbled. Each time it did so, it was louder, more insistent. The mountain had swallowed power, and the power wanted out. "I need my birds," the mad woman said, turning her face to the sky. She leaped forward and clung to a new branch, and another, and another, and another.
"I need my birds," she called again, running from branch to branch as easily as if she was running a foot race across a grassy field, but so much faster than that.
She could feel the magic of the boots lighting up her bones. The growing moonlight seemed to increase it.
"I need my daughter," she whispered as she ran even faster, her eye fixed on the shimmer of blue.
And behind her, another whisper gathered, the beating of paper wings. The crow crawled out of the girl's hood. He arranged his fine feet on her shoulders and then snapped his shiny wings out, launching himself into the air.
"Caw!"
the crow called.
"Luna!"
his voice rang out.
"Caw!"
again.
"Luna! Caw! 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 Luna! Luna! Luna!"
The ridge became steeper. The girl had to grab onto the spindly trunks and branches clinging to the slope to keep from falling backward. Her face was red and her breath came in gasps.
"Caw!"
the crow said. "I'm going up ahead to see what you cannot." He darted forward through the shadows onto the bare knoll at the top of the ridge, where large boulders stood like sentinels, guarding the mountains. He saw a man. The man held a swallow. The swallow kicked and fluttered and pecked.
"Hush now, my friend,"
the man spoke in soothing tones as he wrapped the swallow in a measure of cloth and bound it inside his coat. The man crept toward one of the last boulders near the edge of the ridge.
"So," he said to the swallow, who struggled and fussed, "she has taken the form of a girl. Even a tiger can take the skin of a lamb, It doesn't change the fact that it is a tiger.
And then the man took out a knife.
Caw! The crow screamed. Luna! Caw! Run!
Chapter 42, in which the world is blue and silver and silver and blue. Luna heard the crow's warning, but she couldn't slow down. She was alive with moonlight. Blue and silver, silver and blue, she thought, but she didn't know why. The moonlight was delicious. She gathered it on her hands and drank it again and again. Once she had started, she couldn't stop. And with each gulp, the scene on the ridge became clearer. That lichen-green glow, it was her grandmother. The feathers, they were somehow connected to her grandmother. She saw the man with scars on his face. He looked familiar to her, but she couldn't place him. There was kindness in his eyes and kindness in his spirit. His heart carried love inside it. His hand carried a knife. Blue, the mad woman thought as she streaked through the trees from branch to branch to branch. Blue, 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 blue. With each loping step, the magic of the boots coursed through her body like lightning. And silver, too, she sang out loud. Blue and silver, silver and blue. Each step brought her closer to the girl. The moon was fully up now. It lit the world. The light of the moon skittered along the mad woman's bones from the top of her head to her beautiful boots and back again. Stride, 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 leap, 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 blue, 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 a shimmer of silver, a dangerous baby, a protective pair of arms, a monster with wide jaws and kind eyes, a tiny dragon, a child full of moonlight. Luna, 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 her child. There was a bare knoll on the top of the ridge. She raced toward it. Boulders stood like sentinels, and behind one of the boulders stood a man. A lichen-y green glow showed through a small spot on his jacket. Some kind of magic, the mad woman thought. The man held a knife, and just over the lip of the ridge and nearly upon him was the other glow, the blue glow. The girl. Her daughter, Luna. She lived. The man lifted the knife. He fixed his eyes on the approaching girl. Witch! He shouted. I am no witch, the girl said. I am a girl. My name is Luna.
Lies, the man said. You are the witch. You are thousands of years old. You have killed countless children.
A shuddering breath.
And now I shall kill you.
The man leaped. The girl leaped. The mad woman leaped. And the world was full of birds. Chapter 43, in which a witch casts her first spell, on purpose this time. A whirlwind of legs and wings and elbows and fingernails and beaks and paper. Paper birds swirled around the knoll in a spiral, winding tighter and tighter and tighter.
My eyes, the man yelled.
My cheek, Luna howled.
My boots,
a woman groaned, a woman that Luna did not know.
Caw, screeched the crow. My girl, stay away from my girl.
Birds, Luna gasped.
She rolled away from the tangle and scrambled to her feet. The paper birds swirled upward in a massive formation overhead before alighting in a great circle on the ground. They weren't attacking, not yet. But the way they keened their beaks forward and menacingly opened their wings made them look as though they might. The man covered his face.
Keep them away, he whimpered.
He shook and cowered, covering his face with his hands. He dropped the knife on the ground. Luna kicked it away, and it tumbled over the edge of the ridge.
Please, he whispered. I've met these birds. They are terrifying. They cut me to shreds.
Luna knelt next to him.
I won't let them hurt you, she whispered. I promise.
They found me before when I was lost in the woods. They didn't hurt me then, and I can't imagine that they will hurt you now.
But no matter what, I won't let them. Do you understand me?
The man nodded. He kept his face curled to his knees. The paper birds cocked their heads. They didn't look at Luna. They looked at the woman, sprawled on the ground. Luna looked at her, too. The woman wore black boots and a plain gray shift dress. Her head was shaved. She had wide black eyes and a birthmark on her forehead in the shape of a crescent moon. Luna pressed her fingers to her own brow. "She is here," her heart called. "She is here, she is here, she is here."
"She is here," the woman whispered. "She is here. She is here. She is here."
Luna had an image in her head of a woman with long black hair writhing from her head like snakes. She looked at the woman in front of her. She tried to imagine her with hair.
"Do I know you?" Luna said.
"No one knows me," the woman said. "I have no name."
Luna frowned.
"Did you have a name?"
The woman crouched down, hugging her knees. Her eyes darted this way and that. She was hurt, but not on her body. Luna looked closer. She was hurt in her mind.
"Once," the woman said. "Once I had a name, but I do not remember it. There was a man who called me wife, and there was a child who would have called me mother, but that was a long time ago. I cannot tell how long. Now I am only called prisoner."
"A tower,"
Luna whispered, taking a step nearer. The woman had tears in her eyes. She looked at Luna and then looked away, back and forth, as though afraid to let her eyes rest on the girl for too long. The man looked up. He drew himself to his knees. He stared at the mad woman.
"It's you," he said. "You escaped."
"It's me," the mad woman said. She crawled across the rocky surface and crouched next to him. She put her hands on his face.
"This is my fault," she said, running her fingers across his scars. "I'm sorry. But your life is happier now, isn't it?"
The man's eyes swelled with tears.
"No," he said. "I mean, yes, it is. But no, my wife had a baby. Our son is beautiful, but he is the youngest in the Protectorate. Like you, we must give our baby to the witch."
He looked at the birthmark on the mad woman's forehead. He slid his gaze to Luna. He was looking at her identical birthmark and her identical wide black eyes. A lump in his jacket struggled and pecked. A black beak peeked from the rim of his collar, pecked again.
"Ouch," the man said.
"I'm not a witch," Luna said, drawing up her chin. "Or at least I wasn't. And I never took any babies."
The crow hopped across the bare rock and leaped upward, arcing toward the girl's shoulder.
"Of course you aren't," the woman said.
She still couldn't keep her eyes on Luna. She had to look away, as though Luna were a bright light.
"You are the baby."
"What baby?"
A bird struggled its way out of the man's jacket, that lichen-green glow. The bird squawked and worried and pecked.
"Please, little friend," the man said. "Peace. Calm yourself. You have nothing to fear."
"Grandmama,"
Luna whispered.
"You don't understand. I accidentally broke this swallow's wing," the man said.
Luna wasn't listening.
"Grandmama."
The swallow froze. It stared at the girl with one bright eye, her grandmother's eye. She knew it. Inside her skull, a final gear slid into place. Her skin hummed. Her bones hummed. Her mind lit with memories, each one falling like an asteroid flashing in the dark. The screaming woman on the ceiling. The very old man with the very large nose. The circle of sycamores. The sycamore that became an old woman. The woman with starlight on her fingers. And then something sweeter than starlight. And somehow, Glurk was a bunny. and her grandmother tried to teach her about spells, the texture of spells, the construction of spells, the poetry and artistry and architecture of spells. They were lessons that Luna heard and forgot, but now she remembered and understood. She looked at the bird. The bird looked at Luna. The paper birds quieted their wings and waited.
Grandmama,
Luna said, holding up her hands. She focused all her love, all her questions, all her care, all her worry, all her frustrations, and all her sorrow on the bird on the ground. The woman who fed her. The woman who taught her to build and dream and create. The woman who didn't answer her questions. Who couldn't. That's who she wanted to see. She felt the bones in her toes begin to buzz. Her magic and her thinking and her intention and her hope. They were all the same thing now. Their force moved through her shins, then her hips, then her arms, then her fingers. Show yourself, Luna commanded. And in a tangle of wings and claws and arms and legs, her grandmother was there. She looked at Luna. Her eyes were rheumy and damp. They flowed with tears. My darling, she whispered. And then Zan shuddered, doubled over, and collapsed onto the ground. Chapter 44, in which there is a change of heart. Luna threw herself to her knees, scooping her grandmother in her arms. And oh, how light she was, just sticks and paper and a cold wind. Her grandmother, who had been a force of nature all these years, a pillar holding up the sky. Luna felt as though she could have picked her grandmother up and run home with her in her arms. Grandmama, she sobbed, laying her cheek on her grandmother's cheek. Wake up, Grandmama, please wake up. Her grandmother drew in a shuddering breath. Your magic, the old woman said. It's started, hasn't it? Don't talk about that, Luna said, her mouth still buried in her grandmother's lichen-y hair. Are you sick? Not sick, her grandmother wheezed. Dying. Something I should have done a long time ago. She coughed, shuddered, coughed again. Luna felt a single sob wrench its way from her guts to her throat. You're not dying, Grandmama. You can't be. I can talk to a crow, and the paper birds love me, and I think I found, well, I don't know what she is, but I remember her from before. And there's a lady in the woods who, well, I don't think she's good. I'm not dying this second, child, but I will in good time, and that time will be soon. Now, your magic. I can say the word and it stays, yes? Luna nodded. I had locked it away inside you so you wouldn't be a danger to yourself and others, because believe me, darling, you were dangerous. But there were consequences. And let me guess, it's coming out all up, down, and sideways, yes? She closed her eyes and grimaced in pain. I don't want to talk about it, Grandmama, unless it can make you well. The girl sat up suddenly. Can I make you well? The old woman shivered. I'm cold, she said. I'm so, so cold. Is the moon up? Yes, Grandmama. Raise your hand. Let the moonlight collect on your fingers and feed it to me. It's what I did for you long ago when you were a baby, when you had been left in the forest and I carried you to safety. Zan stopped and looked over to the woman with the shaved head, crouched on the ground. I thought that your mother had abandoned you. She pressed her hand to her mouth and shook her head. You have the same birthmark, Zan faltered, and the same eyes. The woman on the ground nodded. She wasn't abandoned, she whispered. She was taken. My baby was taken. The madwoman buried her face in her knees and covered her stubbled head with her arms. She made no more sounds. Dan's face seemed to crack.
Yes, I see that now.
She turned to Luna.
Every year, a baby was left in the woods to die in the same spot. Every year, I carried that baby across the woods to a new family who would love it and keep it safe. I was wrong not to be curious. I was so wrong not to wonder. But sorrow hung over that place like a cloud, and so I left as quickly as I could.
Zan shuddered and pulled herself to her hands and knees and slid closer to the woman on the ground. The woman didn't raise her head. Zan gingerly laid her hand on the woman's shoulder.
Can you forgive me?
The mad woman said nothing.
And the children in the woods, they are the star children? Luna whispered.
The star children, her grandmother coughed. They were all like you. But then you were enmagicked. I didn't mean to, darling. It was an accident, but it couldn't be undone. And I loved you. I loved you so much. And that couldn't be undone either. So I claimed you as my own dear grandchild. And then I started to die. And that, too, can't be undone, not for anything. Consequences. It's all consequences. I've made so many mistakes.
She shivered.
I'm cold. A little moonlight, my Luna, if you wouldn't mind.
Luna reached up her hand. The weight of moonlight, sticky and sweet, gathered on her fingertips. It poured from her hands into her grandmother's mouth and shivered through her grandmother's body. The old woman's cheeks began to flush. The moonlight radiated through Luna's own skin, too, setting her bones aglow.
The moonlight's help is only temporary, her grandmother said. The magic runs through me like a bucket with holes in it. It's drawn toward you. Everything I have, everything I am, flows to you, my darling. This is as it should be.
She turned and put her hand on Luna's face. Luna interlaced her fingers with her grandmother's and held on desperately.
500 years is an awful lot. Too many. And you have a mother who loves you, who has loved you all this time.
My friend, the man said. He was weeping, big ugly tears down a blotchy face.
He seemed harmless enough now that he didn't have that knife. Still, Luna eyed him warily. He crept forward, extending his left hand.
That's far enough, she said coolly.
He nodded.
My friend, he said again. My, once was a bird friend.
He swallowed, wiped his tears and snot with the back of his sleeve.
I'm sorry if this sounds rude, but,
His voice trailed off. Luna could stop him with a rock, though she quickly waved the thought away when a rock rolled near and started hovering menacingly. No hitting, she thought at the rock with a glare. The rock fell to the ground with a dejected thud and rolled away as though chastened.
I'm going to have to be careful, Luna thought.
But are you the witch? The man continued, his eyes pinned on Zan. The witch in the woods? The one who insists that we sacrifice a baby every year or she will destroy us all?
Luna gave him a cold look.
My grandmother has never destroyed anything. She is good and kind and caring. Ask the people of the free cities. They know.
Somebody demands a sacrifice, the man said. It isn't her.
He pointed to the woman with the shaved head and the paper birds roosting on her shoulders.
I know that much. I was with her when her baby was taken away. As I recall, the woman growled, you were the one doing the taking.
And the man hung his head.
It was you, Luna whispered. I remember. You were only a boy. You smelled of sawdust. And you didn't want...
She paused, frowned.
You made the old men mad.
Yes, the man gasped. Her grandmother began to pull herself to her feet, and Luna hovered, trying to help. Zan waved her away.
Enough, child. I can still stand on my own. I'm not so old.
But she was so old. Before Luna's eyes, her grandmother aged. Zan had always been old. Of course she had. But now it was different. Now she seemed to desiccate by the moment. Her eyes were shrunken and shadowed. Her skin was the color of dust. Luna gathered more moonlight on her fingers and encouraged her mother to drink. Zan looked at the young man.
We should move quickly. I was on my way to rescue yet another abandoned baby. I have been doing so for ever so long.
She shivered and tried to take a single, unsteady step. Luna thought she might blow over.
There's no time for fussing, child.
Luna looped her arm around her grandmother's waist. Her crow fluttered onto her shoulder. She turned to the woman on the ground, offered her hand.
"Will you come with us?"
she said. Held her breath. Felt her heart pounding in her chest. The woman on the ceiling. The paper birds in the tower window.
She is here. She is here. She is here.
The woman on the ground lifted her gaze and found Luna's eyes. She took Luna's hand and rose to her feet. Luna felt her heart take wing. The paper birds began to flap, flutter, and lift into the air. Luna heard the sound of footsteps approaching on the far side of the knoll before she saw it, a pair of glowing eyes, the muscled lope of a tiger. But not a tiger at all, a woman, tall, strong, and clearly magic. And her magic was sharp and hard and merciless, like the curved edge of a blade. The woman who had demanded the boots. She was back.
"Hello, sorrow eater,"
Zan said. Chapter 45, in which a simply enormous dragon makes a simply enormous decision.
"Glurk!"
"Hush, Furion," Glurk said. "I'm listening." They had seen the Sorrow Eater make her way up the side of the knoll, and Glurk felt his blood go cold.
The Sorrow Eater, after all these years.
She looked exactly the same. What kind of tricks had she been up to?
"But Glurk!"
"But nothing. She doesn't know we're here. We shall surprise her."
It had been so long since Glurk had last confronted an enemy or surprised a villain. There was a time that Glurk was very good at it. He could wield 5 swords at once, 4 hands and the prehensile tip of his tail, and was so formidable and agile and huge that his adversaries would often drop their weapons and call a truce. This was preferable for Glurk, who felt that violence, while sometimes necessary, was uncouth and uncivilized. Reason, beauty, poetry, and excellent conversation were his preferred tools for settling disputes. Glurk's spirit, in its essence, was as serene as any bog, life-giving and life-sustaining. And quite suddenly he missed the bog with an intensity that nearly knocked him to his knees.
"I have been asleep. I have been lulled by my love for Zan. I am meant to be in the world, and I have not been. Not for ages. Shame on me."
"Glurk!"
The swamp monster looked up. Furion was flying. He had continued to grow and was yet again larger than when Glurk had last glanced at him. Astonishingly, though, even as he became larger and larger, Furion had somehow regained the use of his wings and was hovering overhead, peering over the rim of the trees.
"Luna is there," he called, "and she's with that uninteresting crow. I despise that crow. Luna loves me best."
"You don't despise anyone, Furion," Glurk countered. "It's not in your nature."
"And Zan is there, Auntie Zan. She's sick."
Glurk nodded. He had feared as much. Still, at least she was in human form. It would have been worse if she had been stuck in her transformed state, unable to say goodbye.
"What else do you see, my friend?"
"A lady. 2 ladies. There is the lady who moves like a tiger and a different one. She doesn't have any hair.
And she loves Luna. I could see it from here. Why would she love Luna? We love Luna.
That is a good question. As you know, Luna is a bit of a mystery, as was Zan ever so long ago.
And there is a man, and a lot of birds are gathered on the ground. I think they love Luna, too. They're all staring at her. And Luna is wearing her Let's Make Trouble face.
Lurk nodded his broad head. He closed one eye and then the other and hugged himself with his four thick arms.
Well then, Therion, he said, I suggest that we also make some trouble. I'll take the ground if you take the air.
But what are we to do?
Therion, you were only a tiny dragon when it happened, but that woman there, the one who is all hunger and prowl, is the reason why your mother had to go into the volcano. She is a sorrow-eater. She spreads misery and devours sorrow. It is the worst sort of magic. She is the reason why you were raised motherless and why so many mothers were childless. I suggest we prevent her from making more sorrow. Shall we?
Pyrian was already in flight, screaming and streaking flames across the night sky.
Sister Ignatia?
Antane was confused.
What are you doing here?
She's found us, whispered the woman with the paper birds.
No, Luna thought, not just a woman. My mother. That woman is my mother.
She could barely make sense of it, but deep inside her she knew it was true.
Zan turned to the young man. You wanted to find the witch? This is your witch, my friend.
You call her Sister Ignatia?
She gave the stranger a skeptical look.
How fancy. I knew her by a different name, though I called her the monster when I was a child. She has been living off the Protectorate's sorrow for...
How long has it been?
500 years, my goodness, that's something for the history books, isn't it? You must be very proud of yourself.
The stranger surveyed the scene, a small smile pressed into her mouth.
Sorrow eater, Luna thought. A hateful term for a hateful person.
Well, 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 the sorrow eater said. Little, little Zan.
It's been ever so long, and the years have not been kind to you, I'm afraid. And yes, I am terribly glad to see that you are impressed with my little sorrow farm. There's so much power in sorrow.
Pity that your precious Zosimos was never able to see it, fool of a man. Dead fool now, poor fellow, as you will be soon, dear Zan.
As you should have been years ago.
The woman's magic surrounded her like a whirlwind, but Luna could see, even from a distance, that it was empty at its center. She, like Zan, was depleting. With no ready source of sorrow nearby, she had nothing to restore her. Luna unhooked her arm from her grandmother and stepped forward. Threads of magic unwound from the stranger and fluttered toward Luna and her own dense magic. The woman didn't seem to notice.
Now, what's all this silliness about rescuing that baby?
The stranger said. Antane struggled to his feet, but the madwoman put her hand on his shoulder and held him back.
She's trying to draw out your sorrow, the madwoman murmured, closing her eyes. Don't let her. Hope, instead. Hope. Without ceasing.
Luna took another step. She felt a bit more of the tall woman's magic unspool and draw toward her.
Such a curious little thing, the sorrow eater said. I knew another curious girl so long ago. So many infernal questions.
I wasn't sad when the volcano swallowed her up.
Except that it didn't, Zan wheezed.
It may as well have, the stranger sneered.
Look at you. Aged, decrepit. What have you made? Nothing. And the stories they tell about you, I'd say that it would curl your hair.
She narrowed her eyes.
but I don't think your hair could take it.
The madwoman left Antane and moved toward Luna. Her movements were slippery and slow, as though she was moving in a dream.
Sister Ignatia, Antane said. How could you? The Protectorate looks to you as a voice of reason and learning, he faltered. My baby is facing the robes. My son. And Athene, whom you care for as a daughter. It will break her spirit.
Sister Ignatia flared her nostrils and her brow darkened. Do not say that ingrate's name in my presence after all I did for her.
There is a part of her that is still human, the madwoman whispered in Luna's ear. She put her hand on Luna's shoulder, and something inside Luna surged. It was all she could do to keep her feet on the ground.
I have heard her in the tower. She walks in her sleep, mourning something that she lost. She sobs, she weeps, she growls. When she wakes, she has no memory of it. It is walled off inside her.
This Luna knew a bit about. She turned her attention to the memories sealed inside the Sorrow Eater. Zan hobbled forward.
The babies didn't die, you know, the old woman said, a mischievous grin curving across her wide mouth.
The stranger scoffed.
Don't be ridiculous. Of course they did. They starved or they died of thirst. Wild animals ate them sooner or later. That was the point.
Zan took another step forward. She peered into the tall woman's eyes, as though looking into a long, dark tunnel in the face of a rock. She squinted.
You're wrong. You couldn't see through the fog of sorrow you created. Just as I had difficulty looking in, you couldn't see out. All these years I've been traipsing right up to your door and you had no idea. Isn't that funny?
It's nothing of the kind, the stranger said with a deep-throated growl. It's only ridiculous. If you came near, I would know.
No, dear lady, you didn't. Just as you don't know what happened to the babies. Every year I came to the edge of that sad, sad place. Every year I carried a child with me across the forest to the free cities, and there I placed the child with a loving family. And to my shame, its original family sorrowed needlessly. And you fed on that sorrow. You will not feed on Antane's sorrow or Athene's. Their baby will live with his parents, and he will grow and thrive. Indeed, while you have been prowling around the forest, your little sorrow fog has already lifted. The Protectorate now knows what it is to be free.
Sister Ignatia paled.
Lies, she said, but she stumbled and struggled to right herself. What's happening? She gasped.
Luna narrowed her eyes. The stranger had depleted almost all but the last remnants of her magic. Luna looked deeper, and there, in the space where the Sorrow Eater's heart should have been, was a tiny sphere, hard, shiny, and cold. A pearl. Over the years, she had walled off her heart, again and again, making it smooth and bright and unfeeling. And she likely hid other things in there as well. Memories, hope, love, the weight of human emotion. Luna focused, the keenness of her eye boring inward, piercing the shine of the pearl. The Sorrow Eater pressed her hands to her head.
Someone is taking my magic. Is it you, old woman?
What magic?
The madwoman said, stepping next to Zan, curling her arm around the old woman to keep her upright and giving Sister Ignatia a hard look.
I didn't see any magic. She turned to Zan. She makes things up, you know.
Hush, you imbecile. You have no idea what you're talking about.
The stranger wobbled, as though her legs had been suddenly turned to dough.
Every night when I was a girl in the castle, Zan said,
You came to feed on the sorrow that seeped under my door.
Every night in the tower, the mad woman said, you went from cell to cell looking for sorrow. And when I learned to bottle mine up, to lock it away, you would snarl and howl.
You're lying,
the sorrow eater croaked. But they weren't. Luna could see the awful hunger of the sorrow eater. She could see her, even now, desperately looking for the tiniest bit of sorrow, anything to fill the dark void inside her.
You don't know a single thing about me.
But Luna did. In her mind's eye, Luna could see the pearly heart of the sorrow eater floating in the air between them. It had been hidden away for so long that Luna suspected the sorrow eater had forgotten it was even there. She turned it around and around, looking for chinks and crevices. There is a memory here, a beloved person, a loss, a flood of hope, a pit of despair. How many feelings can one heart hold? She looked at her grandmother, at her mother, at the man protecting his family.
Infinite, Luna thought. The way the universe is infinite.
It is light and dark and endless motion. It is space and time, and space within space, and time within time. And she knew, there is no limit to what the heart can carry.
It's awful to be cut off from your own memories, Luna thought. If I know anything, I know that now.
Here, let me help you.
Luna concentrated.
The pearl cracked. The sorrow eater's eyes went terribly wide.
Some of us, Zan said, choose love over power. Indeed, most of us do.
Luna pressed her attention into the crack. With a flick of her left wrist, she forced it open, and sorrow rushed out.
Oh,
the sorrow eater said, pressing her hands to her chest.
You,
came a voice from above. Luna looked up and felt a scream erupt in her throat. She saw an enormous dragon hovering just overhead. It soared in a spiral, pulling closer and closer to the middle. It erupted fire into the sky. It looked familiar somehow.
Furion?
Sister Ignatia tore at her chest. Her sorrow leaked onto the ground.
Oh, no! Oh, no! No, no!
Her eyes went heavy with tears. She choked on her own sobbing.
My mother,
the dragon who looked like Furion shouted.
My mother died and it is your fault.
The dragon dove down and skidded to a halt, sending sprays of gravel in every direction.
My mother,
the sorrow eater mumbled, barely noticing the enormous dragon bearing down on her.
My mother and my father and my sisters and my brothers, my village, and my friends, all gone. All that was left was sorrow, sorrow and memory and sorrow.
Possibly Furion grabbed the sorrow eater by the waist, holding her up high. She went limp like a doll.
I should burn you up, the dragon said.
Furion!
Glurk was running up the mountain, moving faster than Luna had thought it was possible for him to move.
Furion, put her down at once. You have no idea what you're doing.
Yes, I do, Furion said. She's wicked.
Furion, stop, Luna cried, clutching at the dragon's leg.
I miss her,
Furion sobbed.
My mother, I miss her so much. This witch should pay for what she's done.
Glurk stood tall as a mountain. He was serene as a bog. He looked at Furion with all the love in the world.
No, Furion. That answer is too easy, my friend. Look, deeper.
Tyrion shut his eyes. He did not put down the Sorrow Eater. Great tears poured from beneath his